see these people humanized, can't kill this specific batch of prisoners.
And Desnos is saying these people are going to live long lives, and it just finally breaks the hearts of the guards, I'm assuming. That's what he wants to do, and he does it.
Yeah.
He's the poet. He figures it out.
Yeah.
That's what creativity can do for you. If you're really serious about living a creative life, you're going to be the person in the room who knows how to get out of that room alive and thrive. Not just survive, but thrive.
So now after people have heard about the poetry rituals and the abstract, I'm sure people are really interested in hearing more details. So maybe we could start with your most recent and ongoing project, Resurrect Extinct Vibration, a ritual and 9 maneuvers that will result in 108 poems. And just have you orient us to what you're doing and why.
Well, this ritual comes out of a different ritual that I did where I was curing depression that I had. I had a very serious depression after my boyfriend Earth was murdered. But it all had to do with, well, basically the fact that this is a man who was not just an AIDS activist. We were an ACT UP in the 80s, but also, and in the early 90s, but also he was an environmental activist. And he changed his name to Earth. And he was tortured, raped, and covered in gasoline and lit on fire. He was burned to death. The man who named himself Earth was treated the way we're actually treating the planet Earth right now. And it just breaks my heart when I think about it. When I finally realized that connection, it was so horrifying. But I wanted it to not be something that stayed in the horror. So I started thinking about the fact that I'm in my 50s now, and that in my lifetime we've lost more than half of all the wild creatures on the planet. So what I've been doing is I've been thinking about eco-poetics as something slightly left or beyond of the conversation about degraded soil, air, and water, including the idea of vibrational absence. So when a species leaves or is severely depleted, they take the sounds of their heartbeat and their footfalls, their breath, their cries, everything's gone, fluttering, wings, gone, and it's not coming back. We now know from these other articles that The Guardian and London and other newspapers are telling us about these studies that we've lost 29% of all the birds. Some of the ornithologists believe that it's because they can't hear one another. Their songs are drowned out by the din of humanity, all of our machinery, our cars, our highways, airplanes. There's also a lot being written about how dolphins have had to create a shorthand for their conversations and to be louder because the oceans are so overwhelmed with our sounds. And they're dumbing down their language on behalf of humans to be able to communicate and hunt and live. So it's something to think about. A, the missing sound, and B, the way that we are filling in their sounds and what that's doing. And what we can possibly do to curb all of this and to stave off this hemorrhaging wound. I think there are solutions. I'm not a dark green. I believe that these solutions can be found. But what I've been doing in the ritual is flooding my body with the sounds of these extinct creatures.
When I was interviewing Ricky Ducournay, she brings up this idea of species loneliness. She believes that even if you live your entire life in a denatured, hyper-urban environment, just the fact that all these creatures that we share a genetic legacy with, we feel the loss of them in our bodies.
Oh, that's exactly what I agree with that completely, because one of the big mysteries around this ritual for me was, well, I'll just say it, the fact that I would be filling my body with these sounds of extinct animals, and I was enjoying it. And I found that disturbing. But I believe what's happening is that my cells have a memory behind these sounds. Even though they're creatures that I didn't actually see, their vibrations were very real and they were very much part of this world. That gossamer that holds all life together gets broken when a species leaves. So we are connected. I believe, I agree with that completely, what you were just saying.
Before we go further into the details around resurrect extinct vibration, let's actually try to listen to a couple of these sounds that you listen to when you're doing the ritual. So this first one, do you have anything you want to say about the o'o?
Well, the o'o was a bird from Hawaii that is recently extinct. There's a very haunting image, a video actually of the bird in one of those documentaries that you can see on PBS with the bird singing and tilting its little head way, and beautiful plumes. This bird was so beautiful. Listening for somebody else to sing back, but he didn't realize he was the last one.
Okay, so here's the o'o. As I was telling you before the show, that one particularly breaks my heart, both mm-hmm. that I've never heard it before, but also just how hauntingly beautiful that one is.
It certainly is, especially when you start putting it into your body, the way that you can feel it. I don't have the speakers like I said, I'm not privileging the head. I have the speakers at my feet first, and I slowly move them up my body.
Well, let's listen to the way the white rhino sounds. Did you want to tell us anything about the white rhino first?
Well, this particular recording are infants, and there used to be 25,000 of them in 1970, and now there are just a couple left. But this sound is also quite, I find this a very joyous but strange, amazing sound. It's terrific.
It's sort of hard to pivot from those sounds. I feel like I want to, perhaps like you did, sit with them and be with them longer.
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful to listen to them, and then, you know, it's not so beautiful once you start coming out of the trance that you're in with them, that they're gone.
Yeah. Well, this project isn't just about loss of species and what we lose when we lose them. Walmart also figures prominently in the project. So why Walmart, and what role does Walmart play in interaction with the extinct animal sounds?
Well, first of all, I'm thinking about Walmart as the epitome of this great, horrible experiment in the United States. I'm thinking in particular about manifest destiny, which is a 19th century term, which was, I mean, let's just be honest, it was a genocide campaign of people and the great herds that they followed. Just exterminate them. I believe that Walmart is an experiment that can't possibly continue. There are over 9,000 of them in the lower 48 states. And the smaller ones have about 250,000 products for sale. The larger ones have 500,000 or more. There's just no reason to have all of these things and to have so many of them. And the amount of energy wasted to fill these stores, I mean, it's just completely unsustainable. But what I do is I sleep in my car in Walmart parking lots. And the thing is, Sam Walton wanted these parking lots to be a place where the baby boomers could park their Winnebagos and their Airstreamers when they're doing the great road trip across America. And yes, that's happening, but he didn't count on the fact that all the homeless people that he himself helped create will also show up. You'll have families crammed into cars with a sign in the windshield that says we need baby formula, we need diapers, things like that. And there's a segregation that goes on that is very common in all the Walmart parking lots. There's no designated area whatsoever for the parking, but they all seem to have this type of segregation where, like, the rich Winnebago snowbirds, they're retirees, they're in, like, the Custer's Last Stand circle, and then all the homeless people are on the other side of the parking lot in their cars and their vans and trunks. But I sleep sort of further back because I want to, when I wake up in the morning, study the terrain of the Walmart with binoculars. I like to look at, you know, if I'm at a Walmart outside of, Tallahassee, Florida, it's going to have palm trees. It's going to have different kind of flora and fauna. But, of course, if I'm in Montana or if I'm in Wyoming, it's going to look very, very different. And then I walk toward the Walmart while, again, listening to these extinct animal sounds. I enter the Walmart, and once I enter the Walmart, it becomes the portal into this Walmart dimension. These massive indoor cities, basically, with the same music playing, the same uniforms, the same grocery carts, the same, everything's the same. So it's like there are 9,000 of these very similar gateways into this dimension, this Walmart dimension. And then I walk a spiral formation inside these massive stores while listening to the animal sounds. And then I get down on the floor and write. Sometimes I'm thrown out, especially if I'm on my back, which I like to do. You're not allowed to do that. I found out that if I kneel down and write, nobody bothers me. They keep an eye on me, but once I lie down, that's it.
Well, let's listen to a couple poems.
Okay.
That's part of the Resurrect Extinct Vibration project. I was thinking of Golden in the Morning, Crane Our Necks, and On All Fours, I Am a Seat for the Wind.
The first one, Golden in the Morning, Crane Our Necks, I dedicate to the 4,600 Google employees who in 2018 wrote and signed a document telling their CEO that they were no longer fulfilling military contracts. The Pentagon wanted Google to wed their AI technology with the killer drones in the Middle East. And these employees, without the safety of a union, these are people with children, mortgages, they risked their careers, risked being blacklisted in the future, but they just couldn't do it. They refused to do it, and they won the argument. It's very brave. And it has not been discussed properly. It has been written about in the New York Times, etc., but the major media does not want to discuss these things because they are so complicit in the arms trade. And that's, you know, basically what this whole story is about. But this is for them. That's 4,600 Google employees. In a past life, I was a little fish who cleaned the shells of turtles. A dream helped me remember their deep voice of thanks. Many nights I heard sharks waiting for the tide to draw me near. When the calendar runs out, it feels lucky another awaits. All I have ever wanted was to forge the English language into a spear and drive it into my heart. Between leaping and being shoved, the lonelier place to put my faith for the swinging motion inside the dance we share. Don the extraordinary suit for this ordinary day. Take our time studying trees to imagine the nests we would build if we were birds. I ask all you talented people spending many creative hours perfecting killer drones, guns, and bombs to please know we are waiting for you on the other side of art in the no-kill zone. So the other poem you asked me to read is this one called On All Fours, I'm a Seat for the Wind. Most of my family's international travel is being sent to war. If we judge love, we can kill off anything, drag by our hair across the days until they make their way inside our dreams where we get to evict them. I want to thank the one who invented knocking on the door, but no one remembers their name to tattoo across my knuckles. I asked an archaeologist about first time she stuck a shovel in the ground. Her answer had same restorative powers as the gravediggers. When we die, we can no longer wipe the muck off. Just lie there, becoming shit of the world. Eat a chip of your own dried blood. Join me in the cannibal sunshine, fully persuaded by the world through song. Each morning, a blue jay screams at edge of the clear-cut forest. I scream with her at the bleeding stumps. Scream inside something borrowed, like ocean, like skin. I want to see before I die a mink wearing a human scarf, skin from a handsome hairy leg. Meow.
We've been listening to C.A. Conrad read his most recent poetry. You have a PCA you wrote called From Whitman to Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
And this project, Resurrect Extinct Vibration, began outside the house where Whitman lived his final years in Camden, New Jersey. So I was hoping you could draw the thread for us from Whitman to Walmart for you.
First of all, thank you so much for bringing this up. This is the 2019 is the 200th birthday of Whitman. As a queer poet who won the Lambda Literary Award recently, it is shocking that during the 200th birthday of Walt Whitman, when I have been invited to talk about Whitman, and I say, well, are you going to talk about his extreme racism? I'm suddenly just disinvited, or like it just becomes very mute. But I will talk about it. Walt Whitman was very important to me when I was younger, growing up in this extremely racist and homophobic part of rural Pennsylvania. He kept me going. And then when I arrived as a teenager in Philadelphia, my friends started saying, well, yeah, but have you read the prose? Because it's not so great. And it's shocking the first time you read that prose. When he talks, he literally says things like that black people in particular, he says, don't have, their brains are smaller. He believed this. He absolutely believed the superiority of white genes. And he spreads these ideas throughout his prose, and it's terrifying. He doesn't want the freed slaves to vote for the president. He literally says that they have the brains of baboons and should not be trusted with the presidential election. It is so unbelievable. And you know, I wrote that essay that you mentioned. The amount of hate mail that I received and continue to receive was unexpected at first, and then I started getting used to it. But I'll tell you the most common argument against my essay from people, and they're all white people, by the way, who write to me with this anger, this vitriol. The most common thing they say is, well, you just don't understand the 19th century American mindset. And I say, okay, so let's follow this train of thought. You're saying that the majority opinion should rule and we should, quote unquote, grandfather Walt Whitman in. So let's just go a couple of decades into the future after Whitman's death, when Hitler is building the death camps in Poland. Since he was elected on the majority vote, unlike Trump, he won the popular vote. And it was an anti-Semitic platform, as we all know. Are you going to excuse the Holocaust? After all, your whole idea is, I don't understand the 19th century American mindset, so I should just allow Whitman to say that black people are inferior and that native people should be wiped out. That's the other thing Whitman says, by the way. He valorizes the Colorado Territory Militia, which was just a group of vigilantes, let's be honest, who slaughtered hundreds of women and children in Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes in Colorado. Whitman writes about this in his famous poem, "O Pioneers, O Pioneers," where he says, "Oh, we are Colorado men. Are your axes sharpened? Are your guns loaded?" It's just remarkable, this kind of wholesale advertisement for manifest destiny. He was the ad campaign for America, just destroying entire generations of people. Here's the thing, though. All that said, when you stand on his doorstep in Camden, New Jersey, directly across the street, there is a state-of-the-art prison, high-rise prison, one of these inner-city prisons. And there's barbed wire, of all kinds of barbed wire, as you can imagine. And you would see in the afternoon these young African-American and Latino mothers coming with their homemade sign language to talk to these men in the windows. That is a scene that played out over and over and over every morning in front of this man's house. And then when you look in the other direction at City Hall in Camden, New Jersey, you'll see etched into the top of this giant font, it says, "I dream a city invincible," Walt Whitman. Mm-hmm. And it's just lies. I don't trust the poems at this point. I can't even bear reading Walt Whitman at this point.
Well, it begs the question of the we and who's included in the we.
Right. Exactly. Apparently, for him, it was white people.
Right. Because he was also anti-Mexican and pro-Mexican-American war. And I like this that you said in the essay. He was not merely an apologist for empire. He was an enthusiastic cheerleader for it. Imagine an American poet of 2015 writing romantic verse about the carnage and suffering our military has recently brought to the millions of people in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, Syria, Somalia, Libya, and Iraq. It's hard to imagine a popular poet writing romantic verse about that.
Right. But it gets swept under the carpet, literally. I mean, Whitman has been so sanitized. And then let's just be honest, that's what he was doing himself to the book. I've had so many people say, "Isn't it amazing that he wrote Leaves of Grass over and over again?" I said, "No, actually, it's not. It's not interesting at all. I mean, it's interesting, but it's not great." He became the great gray poet because he got... If you look at the unexpurgated text, that original text, the one that Allen Ginsberg fell in love with, it's filled with very overt homosexual sex and all kinds of things. He gets rid of that. That's why he's taught in the high schools across the country, all these sort of things. Yeah, I mean, everybody who is arguing against this essay of mine, I can tell that they feel like I'm taking from them this little cozy bearded nest that they've been in a trance with for many years, and they love the poems, and I get it, I understand that. I was in love with the poems. But to completely ignore the actual political body behind this man is... Well, I refuse to do that.
Well, it feels also sort of connected to the Constitution in the sense of the aspirational aspect of the Constitution or the reality of the way the Constitution's enacted too. Because the people in the Constitution,
right,
also had a reference to the native population as merciless savages. So obviously not part of we the people.
Well, that's a problem with our culture. We're constantly saying these things. For every time I'm listening to the radio and I hear somebody with a new medical report, they say, "People are living longer." But I'm like, what people? You know what I mean? What people?
Right.
Rich white people are living longer? Like, who's living longer? I don't think queer people are living longer. I mean, I feel like you need to qualify when you say people are living longer.
Yeah. So you've said that the way that people wanted you to feel for being gay when you were growing up was nothing compared to the shame you felt when you discovered gay racists. Mm-hmm. And in light of this, I wanted to talk to you about queer poetics and a queer politic that to me feels kindred to Matilda Bernstein's Sycamore, which...
I love Matilda.
Which foregrounds the revolutionary potential of queerness over the quest for acceptance in society with gay marriage or gays in the military. If someone were to ask me to describe your poetry to others, I might say that it lies at the intersection between a queer poetics, an occult poetics, and an eco poetics. But I kind of wondered for you if these are inseparable, if all of them are occurring in some fashion in everything you do, or whether when you're doing a poetry ritual around someone you've lost to AIDS or a partner who's been murdered in a hate crime, that there's something different about that than when you're doing a poetry ritual that has to do with species extinction or ecological collapse.
But they are all connected as far as I'm concerned. Misogyny, homophobia, racism, these are foundational problems that go back many centuries, as we know. But in particular, the queer issue, the question coming up that you have there, I think about Judy Gron's amazing book from 1990, Another Mother Tongue, where she is tracing the queer history of ancient Europe before it fell to the church and the dictates of the church, basically when women were in charge. And she looks at the word faggot, you know, the slur faggot, this hateful way faggot is used, comes from that time period. It is traced back to then because the Inquisition believed that a witch's flesh would not burn by sticks, faggots, but which faggots are groups of sticks, alone. So they would take these gay men that follow the witches and put them at their, strangle them and put their dead bodies at the feet of the witch before burning the witches in public. Now, of course, many of the women who were burned during those many horrible years, centuries, it actually was hundreds of years, they were not all witches, but some of them were, and the ones who were witches, even like Joan of Arc, had several gay men followers. So this is there's a very long history of gay men in particular working with these wise women, these healers. Mm. And that goes back all over the world, this kind of history. So when the women had to be destroyed under that's the way these men were thinking, when they wanted to dominate that culture with first, of course, Christianity, but then science gets thrown in there. So they get rid of the women, but they had to get rid of the men, the gay men with them. So it's all connected. And with this comes the destruction of the environment. Mm. Christianity in particular has a ruthless idea about husbandry of animals and the land. It's just unforgiving. And it's hard to talk to many Christians who are so fundamental about what it is, that religion. They will not listen to you talk about global warming or poisoning the environment because they claim God gave us the planet to do whatever we wanted to.
Well, let's finish with a couple more poems. How about For the Feral Splendor That Remains and and the Clam Soup poem?
So this poem is titled For the Feral Splendor That Remains for Kazem Ali. Sometimes I strain to hear one natural sound. When gender blurs in a poem, my world sets a tooth in the gear. If God is in me, when will I ask for my needs to be met? Every God is qualified. It's not such a secret. When I was afraid of the road, I learned to drive. Map says name of your city and ocean, line drawn to it, towing behind the big party. History of life on Earth might be interesting to a visitor one day. Chewing parsley and cilantro together is for me where forest meets meadow. In a future life, would we like to fall in love with the world as it is, with no recollection of the beauty we destroy today? And the second poem is very brand new, and it's titled, Clam Soup Was the Name of a Cat Who Was Mean to Everyone But Me, for Dara Wire. To have a good death, I choose to take no advice. No one screwing their way into my socket. I will have no regrets to bore everyone with on my deathbed. Whenever my heart is a burning building, I throw myself out the window, knock down the door, get out, get going. I only eat vegetables, so I am never impatient for the cow to make ice cream. Leave that cow alone. Get out, get going. Too many people sitting around using the word hope for us to get anything done around here. Always remember you come from people who shower after work, my grandfather told me. I promised to never forget, and promised myself to rebuff the whiskey he loved. Makes me glad to think of falling in love with making the letter G as a kid. G, 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 curve and return. G, G, G. All I wanted for Christmas was an X-ray of my hand making G, G, G. Pleasure in forms, united in a life I choose to love with no matter what. Waking to the animal embraced, I have been asleep for many years and do not know these celebrities you speak of, Ichabod Crane told me. They are the names of poets, I told him, and they belong to the world in a way that is honest until it terrifies me. Many thanks, all my love.
Sia Conrad, thank you so, so much for being
on
the show.
Thank you, David, and thank you for everybody at PNCA who brought me here.
We were talking today to the poet Sia Conrad, listening to some of his poems from his latest project, Resurrect Extinct Vibration. You've been listening to Between the Covers. I'm David Naiman, your host.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, listener-supported community radio. Stay tuned for Shocks of Sheba, up next after these headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.